Magandang hapon, nakikinig kayo sa Radyo Kapwa, CKUT 90.3 FM, where all Filipinos are Filipino enough.
Bon après-midi, vous êtes sur les ondes de CKUT 90.3 FM. Good afternoon, magandang hapon. You are listening to Radio Kapwa on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is Fran Stoner, joined by my co-host as usual, the wonderful Veronica Bertiz and the lovely Desiree Ruiz, and Fenny Cristo making sure we sound good on the sound engineering side. A little shout out to Justin and Laura, who are always in the background, also making sure that we sound good. So really excited today to be talking to the wonderful teachers in our community. We definitely don't celebrate teachers enough. And I would have loved to have a Filipina teacher growing up, but unfortunately those were not the cards I was dealt. So we are so, so pleased to have Ira de Guzman with us, who did her bachelor in kindergarten and elementary education and has been teaching for the past 3 years. Ira, take it away, please. So what do you want to share about yourself? Please introduce yourself to our listeners.
Hi, everyone. So my name is Ira. I was born in the Philippines, and I moved to Canada when I was 11 years old with my family. I went to high school in French. I did the welcoming class, Classe d'Accueil, learned French there. And then I went to CEGEP and Vanier and got my bachelor's degree in McGill. Like our friend said, I did major in kindergarten elementary, and I've been teaching for 3 years now. And ever since I moved here, I've been living in the West Island. So yes, that's me.
Amazing. Can you tell me a little bit about what led you to teaching in the first place? How did that come about?
When I was younger, I've always liked being with kids, around kids. I've always babysat my cousins and my nephews and nieces. And I was also influenced by my mom because actually she was a teacher in the Philippines as well. So yeah, I thought I should try it out. And my brothers were really supportive, my parents too. They're like, yeah, you should try it out. That's something you're interested in. So that's what led me to teach.
Love it. And I love that there was this influence too. I didn't know that your mom was also a teacher in the Philippines.
Yeah, she actually taught me in kindergarten too, because my teacher at the time was pregnant. So she replaced my teacher for a year. So
that's hilarious. You gotta love these like involved Filipino parents who are like, you're not gonna do it. Okay, I'm coming in and I'm gonna do it and I'm gonna teach.
Yeah.
Amazing. Can you tell me a little bit about like what the day-to-day looks like? You know, you hear about a teacher's profession and it sounds like you guys are up every morning at the crack of dawn. Tell me a little bit about what the day-to-day looks like.
So where I've taught, we start pretty early. So yes, we wake up early. We start at 7:50. So I have to be there earlier. So I get in, I just like look at my class, see if it's organized, if I have to prep something beforehand. Sometimes I do all the prepping before, like on the weekends or after school, because I don't want to work too much during school or during the weekend. So I do everything beforehand, but there are days when you can't. So in the morning, I make sure everything's organized. And then we welcome the students, and it actually depends what grade I teach. So every year it's different. When you're starting to become a teacher, it's hard actually to get a permanent post. So for the past 3 years, I've been teaching different grades and also in different schools. So the first year I've taught grade 4. And second year, I taught French to different grades. And last year, I taught kindergarten. So I'm just going to talk about like my routine last school year because it's more fresh. So we welcome the students. They go, they remove their stuff. And then right away, we go outside for outdoor activity because my school at a time, we are pushing towards more outdoor learning. So it's a great way to start the morning. We go outside, we let them do free play. So, you know, it's also good for the students to just talk because they're usually so excited to see each other in the morning anyway. So even though they saw each other just yesterday, they're just always so excited. So we just let them do their thing. They talk, play around, and get them moving. And then we get back inside after like 20 minutes, and then we do the circle time. And then circle time, I ask them questions like, how was your morning? How was your evening? Or just different questions. How was your weekend? Or even I started to do, what are you thankful for today? What is your, I don't know, I like to ask different questions. And so one of my favorite questions is, what are you thankful for? Because I like to remind them to be grateful. And usually we always focus on negative things. So kids, I want them to have that in their mindset, to be always thankful for something. And it's so funny, their responses, they're so cute. They're like, one of them was saying, I'm thankful for my mom making me pancakes. And I'm thankful for my dad cuddling me last night. It was just so like, so cute. And it reminds you that yeah, you should be thankful about like the little things, you know? And then after circle time, we do some movement again. There's a lot of movement in kindergarten. We do a lot of movement and learning at the same time through movement, through playing. It's play-based, basically, because they're trying to learn how to socialize and be kind to each other and how to respond in appropriate ways. We do songs, we do academic stuff, but like, the thing is, some people forget that you can't force them to be too advanced in their academic because their brain is just not developed yet. So even though you want them to learn numbers or letters, there are ways to do it. That's why we do it in play-based and not just to like through books or through, it's more like engaging. And then it's snack time. And then it's recess, and then it's, oh, they come back, and then that's where we do our centers. So we have four centers, and different centers, that's where we have different learning goals. So here is one center is for sensory, the other center is for movement, the other center is for their hand, like penmanship or handwriting, the other center is arts and crafts. So there's different centers all the time and they rotate. And then it's free play again. And then it's lunchtime. After lunchtime, I actually taught kindergarten 4 years old. So it's a new program. Sometimes parents, they choose to put their children in kindergarten, 4 years old, or in daycare. So after lunchtime, we do a little bit of relaxation or nap time, but I noticed that a lot of kids don't take naps anymore. So they just relax, lay down, and be quiet. And then after that, we do more of free play where I put different specific toys and they can play with. And then recess again. So it's a lot of free play it's a lot of play and a lot of fun in kindergarten. I'm always on my toes. There's always something. So it's so much fun. I really enjoyed kindergarten last year.
I love that, Iran. Thank you so much for being here. This is for those of you listening, this is Desiree speaking. So there's so many things that popped up as you were sharing that as a mother of a 9-year-old who went through kindergarten and is going through to fourth grade, I just want to piggyback of what Fran said and just like it's so much gratitude to you and to all of the teachers for the work that you do. And it is not celebrated enough, you know. And my daughter one day came home last year and she was like, the teacher said she was tired. And I said, well, of course she's tired. I'm tired. I have one of you. She has like 20 of you. And I always, and I volunteered on a few field trips with her when she was in daycare and when she was in kindergarten. And it was, you know, 1 hour, 2 hours of my time. And I remember, you know, at least in my situation, you know, when you volunteer, you obviously you're taking care of kids. And in that 1 hour, I was so exhausted. And I felt a little bit, a snippet of what I can only imagine teachers experience when they're taking care of other people's children. So I just wanted to, again, say thank you for that compassion and that empathy of taking care of kids that are not yours and creating this space for kids to play and to share and to be creative, because it's so important. And I often find that the kindergarten, the role that the early childhood teachers play is often forgotten in the long trajectory of like a person's school life, but it is so critical. Right. And I'm going to share. So yesterday we organized a trip to the Kanesetake powwow for the Centre Kapwa members, and the elder that did the opening, he said so many amazing things and actually took a lot of notes. But one of the many things he said, you know, always give thanks to the water because the water gives us life. Give thanks to Mother Earth because Mother Earth also gives us life. And when you see kids playing give thanks to the grass. And when you see kids playing in the grass, that is them walking on her back and massaging her back. And when they're playing in the grass, they're braiding her hair. And then he really started emphasizing on children. And he said, give thanks to our children, because our children are the most pure. And the children allow us to see things that we do not see. So I'm saying this because you creating these spaces for your students to be creative and to, you know, be free and play is helping them, you know, be connected to source essentially, because they are so powerful. So just, I again wanted to thank you for the work that you do. And it just, the energy that I'm getting from you also is just so warm. But I'm curious to know, the question I have for you is, what have you learned from your students?
What I've learned throughout like my 3 years of teaching is that life is really about the simple things in life. What makes you happy, what makes them happy is just the little things. And sometimes we forget that, like we get caught up in our daily lives and our problems, and we forget to look at the little things that makes us happy. Like it could be, for them, it could be someone new playing with them, or someone saying hi to them, or just someone sharing a toy with them. You know, or just whenever I ask them, what are you thankful for today? They would say really like simple things like my mom cooking me pancakes, cuddling, spending time with my grandparents, like those little things. And I'm really grateful to actually work with them because I get to be reminded of all those beautiful little things in life, and it keeps me grounded as well.
Amazing. I love that. I'm going to squeeze in. It's France again. I just wanted to ask, can you speak to us a little bit more about the importance of learning through play? Because I think that this is something that we forget about as we get older, but yeah. Actually, even as adults, we learn better through play, through yeah. fun, through that stimulation. So from your teacher hat and your teacher perspective, like, let's put this McGill degree to use. Please tell me, you know, the importance and remind the adults listening of the importance of learning through play and how that's transferable.
Yeah, so learning through play is very important in your childhood. But even then, like you said, even when you grow older, it's still important to play and learn in that way. It's funny because when someone would pass through the hallways and see my class, we're always playing. And then they would think like, they're just playing, like they're always having free time. Like, what is this? They're not learning anything. Actually, we are. Like, when you're a child and you're playing with these interactions, like you're playing, I don't know, restaurant, you're playing how to interact with another person, how to ask, how to receive properly, how to say please and thank you. You know, so when you're learning, when you're playing with like trains and shapes, that you then learn colors and you learn different types of different parts of the trains. Like, it's important because children are very curious beings, and we are also curious beings. Like, we forget that it's innate for us to be curious. So through play, we get to discover many things. Something that I really do or implement in my classroom is teaching kids learn in fun and engaging ways and relevant to them. So I try to incorporate like hands-on activities, projects, technologies, nature, outdoor, because that's the way that they can retain and participate and in turn retain the information. I ask my students like feedback on like, oh, what can I do better? Did you like what we did? Did you like the project? What can we improve on? And they're like, oh, I really like that we went outside and do this and we played about something. We did this. And I'm like, hey, why did you like that? And then they say, because it's memorable. I'm going to remember it, not just like sitting down and going through the books and memorizing everything. I'm like, okay, cool. So learning through play is very important, not only in your childhood, not only with children, but also with adults, because you like ignite your curiosity and you have more fun and you retain more information that way.
Wow. This is like what, the second time that we had a teacher in our radio show, or like you're the second from what my counting is. And everyone knows I'm really passionate about protecting the teachers. our parents, like in our family, there's always going to be that one person who was a teacher. My grandma was, and then my other grandma from my dad's side was as well. So, and then also as a woman, like we're just naturally or kind of like socialized to be educator, especially at the young age. And when you were talking about your daily day, like activities, it just, my political science lens just was put in, and in my head I'm like, can Drainville hear this? You know, Minister of Education's hearing this. Of you were talking, and I'm like, and then we go lunch, and I'm like, what? It's just lunchtime now. You know, so it's just,
it's so true. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, wow, that's a lot of details in one morning. Yeah. So yes, thank you, Vero,
I was worried that I was talking a lot and giving you so much details.
No, but this is very important. This is very important for you to like to detail it, because essentially what you're doing is not only you mentioned this, like there's a lot of play and you're kind of worried, like, oh my god, we could like, in my students are just playing, but essentially what you're doing is you're protecting the innocence of these children, right? And you are being the primary advocate for them, because Monday to Friday, the majority of their time is with you. It's with Miss Ira, right? And for you to protect that, that also means that you provide so much emotional labor. And that's the emotional labor that is not paid. And how dare Minister Genville says that a recent graduate should start in kindergarten because it's the easiest. No, I believe that all of the teachers, the profession itself is the hardest, and you can't tell the child, oh, don't eat your kulangot. You can't do that, right? You just cannot do that, right? But if you're speaking to, let's say, a CGF student, you'd be like, yo, why are you eating your kulangot? Stop doing that. You can reason, you can communicate. Mm-hmm. What you're doing is you're teaching these children to be the next future generation who will lead us, who will become the engineers, who will become the doctors. And for that, I really do want to take time and say how, like, you're the person who's molding our future generation, and that deserves its own time. Sorry, like that's me hyping people up. But teachers have a lot of, like, for me, I become very territorial, and I really want to like protect them and actually advocate. So I guess that's where my advocate hat comes in. And when you mention about what are what are they grateful for, essentially what they're grateful for is just time. And quality time. It's because under our society, our parents are just way too busy to provide time for them. And playing with children is always, playing in general is considered childish, right? And like, I have noticed this with like my friends and Des, that like, you gotta go spend your time with children. You gotta go meet them where they're at. You can't be possibly bringing your children to your office and be like, expect them to just sit still. So again, you keep on talking about play, and I feel like you're being worried because you keep on talking about my children just keeps on playing. But at the end of the day, we're not made to sit still right here and then listen to like, B, C. We're not doing that. Because even learning, when you mentioned when you went to, okay, that was not a case for me too. We would go out, right? So as human beings, we're just naturally like, we need to move. We need to be stimulated. Mm-hmm. And so for you to detail that, to like vulgarize the whole thing, I think that a lot of people needs to understand the profession of being a early childhood educator. And that's like one of the things that I want to say. Wait, I have one more thing to say. Yeah, everybody. Yeah. So I just wanted to rant about that because I was so pissed off about that, the Janville minister who says that, like, you know, like early childhood educators, like low energy. And that was his response for teachers who's burning out. So that really pissed me off. And the mere fact that, again, like cell phones and devices are helping tools. If I knew 11 years, 10, 15 years ago, that I can Google how to translate things in French, it would have been much easier. We're a family of six and we're borrowing one dictionary because that's the only thing we can afford, right? So can you imagine this tool that can be used in classroom? I think that this is just a distraction to, you know, to really face head on, like on manque des enseignants. That's the reality, and it's a distraction. But anyway, we're moving. I'm becoming very political, but then
that's
I just
thought, okay. I would love for Drainville to spend an afternoon with Nev and Kalayaan, and then we will see just two, not even 30 kids, just two. Yeah. Two of our kids, and let's see what ends up happening.
Yeah. And then you just coming in there with such an open personality and just taking care of your children, and that's it. Like, I feel like we can't juggle in a lot of things, and that's why we have a community, and that's why there's Veronica who just keeps on yapping about this type of things. Because at the end of the day, I want you to protect the children, our future. And in our case, as a community organizer, we'll do our best to shed light. And in Radio Kapwa, that's literally what we're doing. So now I will segue to my question to you, and that is going to be, you came in here when you were 11 years old, the 1.5 generation, just like me. And I'm curious to what will your answer be in this question, in what ways you were told you weren't Filipino enough?
Okay, I was...
And you picked a profession that's acceptable in our culture. Yes. Right? Because often folks will be like, well, I didn't go into nursing, I didn't go into teaching. So I'm like so curious about your answer, because you picked one of the things where the titas and the nanais are like, ooh, check, good. You're I'm good, not, that's not, good.
That's good.
Well, I wasn't told directly to my face that I wasn't Filipino enough, but I felt that when I was in high school, so I was in a CRE, right, like welcoming class, I was with other Filipinos. And then after a year or two in that class, we went to the regular classes. And when I went to the regular class, my friends, I was friends with diverse ethnicities, different type of people comes from different ethnicities. But the other Filipinos that were in welcoming class with me, they all stuck together and they spoke Tagalog and they're always just hanging out together, right? So I feel like for them, they wouldn't consider me as Filipino enough, because even though I speak the language Tagalog, I don't necessarily hang out with just Filipinos. And I think I adapted more to the Canadian way of life, especially like I've always lived in the West Island. So
it also just sounds like you were expanding your horizons and like trying to meet new people. Right. And it was like, this very cliquey Filipinos. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm super proud to be Filipino, but we don't need to be cliquey.
Exactly.
Like, there's so many cool folks out there.
There's nothing wrong with that. Like, I'm not saying anything bad about that. It's just they stay together, and that's good. That's what, like, made them happy, and that's what they wanted to do, and that's who their friends were. I just, when I went to the regular classes, I met different people. Like, And I'm like, okay, well, I want to be friends with you guys. And even I had a Filipino friend, but she was born here. So she didn't speak the language, but she was Filipino too. So I'm sure that according, maybe, not sure, but I'm assuming that according to the Filipino group of friends, they wouldn't consider her as Filipino enough as well, because she was born here and she wasn't part of the group or something like that. But it depends who you ask that question to, because if you ask my friends, like my Caucasian friends or my Indian friends, they would say, yeah, of course you're Filipino. Like, what are you talking about? Of course, mm-hmm. you're Filipino enough. Not enough, but like you are Filipino. There's no like enough or not. You know what I mean?
How is it that other people are the one who kind of like, you're Filipino, duh, you know? But then mm-hmm. when it comes to our own community, that's right. where the gatekeeping actually, you know, is more active and alive. And yeah. I mean, here in South Kapwa, we really try to like push that boundary and actually take that gate out and destroy that.
Right, yeah.
but it takes... Again, for really sharing your story with us. And this is, I feel very, very territorial when it comes to teachers. That's just personally for me. But you are doing such a heavy, but also you're planting, essentially you're the first person who's planting the seeds for all of these children. And the mere fact that they see that you're Filipino also change a lot of perspective. So can you just imagine all of these Filipino kids seeing like, oh, Miss Ira is like me, you know, like, and mm-hmm. the fact that you were also, you experienced going to Akure, going to, and then finishing diplome en français and then going to like higher education and speaking both language and teaching French. It's huge. And I think we should really celebrate and take that moment, but we can't because we're running out of time. So my last question to you would be, what does Kapwa mean to you?
Kapwa means to me fellowship and community. I think that as Filipino, we're very collectivist culture, like mm-hmm. also like family oriented. So I think we're also very Kapwa oriented. We value togetherness, a sense of belonging, and we're always supportive and always willing to lend a hand to our fellow Filipinos. Yeah, that's what Kapwa means to me. Like in my neighborhood, we have few Filipino neighbors here, and then whenever we have a party, we'd always share food to each other and invite each other. So yeah, we're very neighborly, and we just like having that community and having a sense of belonging towards each other.
Yes, for sure. Thank you for that answer, Ira. Definitely a good way to close out. Actually, wait, it looks like you want to say something. Is there anything you want to add?
Because Veronica was talking about like the Ministry of Education. I also want to add to that, like you mentioned burnout. Actually, a lot of teachers are burning out and there is a lack of teachers, especially in the French school board. And I've read somewhere that they're just accepting anybody who...
Unlicensed.
Without teacher's degree. And I feel that that's very insulting to us teachers who actually went through schools and did, you know, teacher's training and our internship and all that. And the fact that I had classmates who were hijabis and they graduated, but they're not allowed to teach because of they're wearing hijab. It's ridiculous to me, and it makes me very frustrated. And the burnout about that, there's a lot of unrealistic expectations that put on teachers, parents, admin, government. They all expect us to do everything we can, which we do, and we go above and beyond what we can do, but then we burn out because even though we try to do everything we can, if we have no support, there's little to no support, because you would ask your admin like, oh, I need support in my class. This student is very challenging, difficult. They would tell you, oh, sorry, we don't have budget for that. Sorry, we can't give you an aid or support in your class because we don't have the budget. It's ridiculous. And you're like, okay, what am I supposed to do? Like, it's taking away from your teaching time because you have to discipline, you have to take care of whatever issue is happening with this child or another child. It's getting very and sustainable actually teaching. And even with the fact that I told you in the beginning, it's hard to get a permanent job. There's a system in every school board, you have to go into the recall list, priority list. We have to have 2 full contracts before you can get there. And it's like so frustrating because every year you don't know where you're going to go. You don't know if you're going to be having a contract that year. You don't know if you're just going to be subbing that year. It's unstable. So then you have this anxiety every year. Like, so yeah, it's just unpredictable and unsustainable. And not to mention, like, yes, teachers, we get underpaid. We're the least paid in the country amongst other provinces. Even after we ask for salary increase, they increase it for like what? Like, I don't even know, like 1K or something like that. It's, yeah.
So there you go. For those who are still listening to us on CKUT 90.3 FM, Veronica got a little bit passionate about it, but we must protect our teachers at all costs. And we should also destroy the narrative that kindergarten and early childhood educators are not skilled enough to teach like elementary CJEP. Like, that is just absolutely not true. So if you're listening, Minister Drainville, c'est pas vrai. Essayez vous-même de essayer de, you know, take care of children yourself. I don't think you're fit for it. But anyway, thank you so much, Ira, for graciously telling us your story and like running us through your daily activities with the children, the future of our generation. And again, this is Radio Kapwa on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is Veronica. Mabuhay.
Magandang hapon sa inyong lahat. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jen Marvin Reyes. I am a youth leader and community organizer here bringing you important news back home in the Philippines. The article is from Rappler with the title, A Clan LGBTQIA+ Community Gets Spotlight During Ati-Atihan Festival. A clan of volunteer youth and civic group celebrated the vibrant and culturally rich Ati-Atihan Festival, shining a spotlight on the LGBTQIA+ community in Calibutown, Aklan Province, on Tuesday, January 16. Local drag queens brought the inner divas to the stage and showcased the unique styles and personalities, capturing hearts of the audience at the Ati Pride, a drag brunch hosted by JC's International or JCI Aklan Kalintao. The full proceeds of the event are intended to benefit the Ati indigenous community in Aklan. Organizer Paul Robert Salazar said they aim to rally and bring more allies in the LGBTQIA+ movement. Most of the members of the GCI are straight, but this event taught us that we are all part of their movement. We wanted to spark something for their endeavors, Saladar said. Michelle Villanueva, one of the drag artists, said the Ati Pride helped the community understand the LGBTQIA+ more. Masaya ang puso ko na mayroon tayong ganito sa Aklan. Taos puso naming nirender ang talit namin sa inyo. Kami-kami pa rin na magkakasama. Ang tanging nagbabago ang entamplado, she said. Organizers also opened the runway ball and dance battle on the spot contestants and those from various LGBTQIA+ organizations in the province joined them. Meanwhile, volunteers from the American International Health Alliance, or AIHA, and the Provincial Health Office, or PHO, offered free human immunodeficiency virus, or HIV, testing during the event. Webster Sassy's PHO Health Program Officer said a number of the HIV cases in Aklan as of September 2023 has reached 559, and 49 of those infected died due to disease. Sassy said 17 of 49 deaths only happened in 2023. Based on their records, there were 40 HIV cases involving males who had engaged in same-sex from January to July 2023, with the highest number of the age group of 15 to 34 years old. Sassy said stigma and discrimination persist as barriers to accessing HIV testing services in public hospitals and clinics. I encourage you to get tested too. Being aware of your HIV status provides you with essential information to maintain good health, she added. The article was written by Jed Harme and published on January 19, 2024. Thank you so much for listening. Maraming salamat sa pakikinig. Once again, this is Jen Marvin Reyes delivering you Philippine news from abroad.
Sa tu. Side. mag-isa. At walang kasama. Bagamat malamig aking natawid. Madalas magpatanong kung ano kayang pakiramdam nang may kausap sa gabi. Bukod sa aking silid, bago ka sa aking mga ako, dapat di kay sigurado. Di ko basta basta bibigay ang aking puso sa kahit kanino. Ako ay
afternoon, magandang hapon, and bon après-midi. Laura here. Thank you so much to Ira de Guzman for speaking up about the difficulties of being an educator in Quebec, for providing insight as someone experiencing these difficulties firsthand. I also want to thank our wonderful hosts, Vero, Desiree, and France, as always, for the thoughtful questions and conversations you have on this show, as well as Fanny in the background for recording. As always, you may find the songs played on this episode on ckut.ca/playlists/ry within the next few days. Dans les prochains jours, vous allez pouvoir retrouver les chansons jouées dans cet épisode sur ckut.ca/playlists/ry. As you all may know, through the weeks of protests, the stability and work conditions of public sector educators and healthcare workers under the gouvernement Legault have been seriously challenged. Whether you ask an educator or a healthcare worker what the problems are, the same main issues come up. That is, of being understaffed, underworked, and underpaid. And these aren't issues that only affect them. These issues also affect the millions of students and patients under the public care system. Under the Legault government, taking the time to explain or convince a patient to take their medicine, or taking the extra time to explain an equation or question to a student learning at their own pace, become things that educators and healthcare workers lack time and energy to follow through on. lacking the time and resources to provide quality care can put at risk many patients' health as well as students' academic futures, and causes many educators and healthcare workers to forfeit their own personal time or lunch breaks out of care when they shouldn't. To learn that the province is hiring and allowing untrained and uncertified educators to teach the current generation and generations to come due to lack of staff when there are trained professionals banned from practicing under Bill 21 is just infuriating, in my opinion. For those unaware, Bill 21 was passed in 2019. It prohibits wearing any religious symbols in the workplace and is undoubtedly a huge contributor to the issue of lacking staff. Bref, we talk about these things because we need to talk about them to bring awareness. We need to know that our votes chose Legault and that we have the collective power to change things. Comme vous le savez peut-être tous, au fil des semaines des manifestations, la stabilité et les conditions de travail des éducateurs et des travailleurs de la santé du secteur public sous le gouvernement Legault ont été sérieusement remises en question. Que vous demandiez à un éducateur ou à un professionnel de la santé quels sont les mêmes problèmes principaux reviennent. Celui du manque de personnel, de la surcharge de travail et du sous-paiement. Et ce ne sont pas des problèmes qui les concernent uniquement. Ces problèmes touchent également des millions d'étudiants et de patients bénéficiant du système de soins publics. Sous le gouvernement Legault, prendre le temps d'expliquer ou de convaincre un patient de prendre ses médicaments ou de prendre le temps supplémentaire d'expliquer une équation ou une question à un élève apprenant à son rythme deviennent des choses dont les éducateurs et les travailleurs de la santé manquent de temps et d'énergie à donner. Le manque de temps et de ressources pour fournir des soins de qualité peut mettre en danger la santé de nombreux patients ainsi que l'avenir académique de nombreux étudiants et même amener nombreux éducateurs et travailleurs de la santé à renoncer à leur temps personnel ou à leur pause déjeuner en dehors des soins alors qu'ils ne devraient pas. Apprendre que la province embauche et permet à des éducateurs non formés et non certifiés d'enseigner à la génération actuelle et aux générations à venir en raison du manque de personnel, alors qu'il existe des professionnels qualifiés interdits d'exercer en vertu du projet de loi 21, est tout simplement exaspérant à mon avis. Pour ceux qui ne le savent pas, le projet de la loi 21 a été adopté en 2019. Il interdit le port de tout symbole religieux sur le lieu de travail et contribue sans doute au problème du manque de personnel. Bref, on en parle parce qu'il faut en parler pour sensibiliser. Ceci dit, bienvenue aux annonces de cette semaine. That being said, welcome to this week's community announcements. Friday, January 26th, catch Jella de la Peña's short film screening of Aking Senakulo at Shift Concordia from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. This piece of work, Aking Senakulo, is a speculative experimental film that explores their perspective of queer identities under the light of religious and colonial prisms. You may find a familiar face as the main actor is Coco Mariano, who is double-bodied by Veronica Jane Bertiz, both Centre Capua members. For more information, check out their website at www.jelladp.com or their Instagram at jelladp, J-E-L-A-D-P. Up next, this Saturday, January 27th, Pulp Book and Cafe marks their inaugural Storytime Hour for children from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. As James of Current Gay Underscore Writes Fame, of previous Children Books' manager, reads from two of his favorite kids' books, I Want to Be a Vase by at Space Prince Julio and What Riley Wore by at Elana Carnold. and maybe some Julie Flett if time allows. No sign-up is necessary. Let the kids enjoy a couple of fun stories, and parents can enjoy an hour of potentially uninterrupted book browsing and fresh coffee. For more information, visit their Instagram at pulpbooksmtl. On the same day, but in the evening of January 27th, your favorite R&B party, Love Notes, by at Hello Honey Bun, at Jet Set Cyro Future, and at Filipinos of Montreal, will be held at Le Ministère, 4521 Rue Saint-Laurent. Get your early bird tickets by checking their Instagram page at terry.reyes and at Love Notes, spelt as LoveNotesss. A few days later, on January 29th, as part of Frigovert's Anti-Colonial Week programming, they are hosting the Plant Sisters Workshop with Andrea Clare and Hunter Cubitt Cook. Learn about how to connect with your plant ancestors. They will discuss our relationships with our plant ancestors, decolonizing herbalism, urban plant allies, how to build relationships with our future ancestors, repairing and restoring relations, and so much more. For more information, visit their Instagram page at Le Frigo Vert, spelled as LeFrigoVert. Starting January 30th, Black Mental Health Connections has now opened registration for their peer support groups. They are offering two 10-session-long peer support groups running from January 29th and 30th to April 8th and 9th, 2024. Through these no-cost groups, they aim to break the stigma and shame associated with mental health and create an anti-oppressive, harm-reductive space for cathartic release, community building, and skill sharing. BMHC's peer support programming is remote and offered over Zoom. To register, visit their Instagram page at BMHC to find the link. Starting on the same day, January 30th, join Black Mental Health Connections Montreal and Vent Over Tea for a three-part event series called Building Community from Care to Action. This series will run from October 2023 to March 2024 and invites you to explore the essence of community care, the significance of genuine connections with ourselves and others, and how these relationships can drive meaningful change. To register, head over to their Instagram pages at BMHC and at Vent Over Tea, spelled as VentOverTea, for the links. Lastly, and also on Tuesday, January 30th, another queer support group for LGBTQ plus youth ages 15 to 30 years old, hosted by Involved Youth, is taking place at Centre Communautaire LGBTQ plus Montréal at CCLGBTQ. This is located at 2075 Rue Plessis. This is located at 2075.
You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.